Welcome to Loco, a weekly conversation celebrating the stories of unconventional yet phenomenal single women expats. Today I speak with Stephanie Perry, the woman behind Vicarious. We talk about the grown-up gap year. Hello, Stephanie. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you. I'm very happy to be here.
And I'm pleased that you stuck it out with me and were able to reschedule and get through my technical difficulty.
No problem.
Okay, so we'll just get right into it. If you could just give us a little bit of background information.
My name is Stephanie Perry. I have a travel blog called Vicarious at vicarious.com. I took off and there's been no turning back. I've been traveling consistently for the last 2 years and change, although I'm back home now for a couple of months. But I really, really am so thankful for the people who showed me that you could leave the United States, live at a reasonable price, you know, in other parts of the world, and be comfortable and happy and enjoy it and not have to deal with, you know, the negatives of living in the U.S.
Right. Could you give us a little bit more background about how you were introduced to that and who are these saints that introduced you to this great way of living?
Yeah, I went on a vacation to Brazil. It was my 40th birthday, and it was during the Brazil's World Cup. I don't watch soccer at all, but I was like, you know, perfect time. Why not go? So I went to Brazil, and everywhere I went, you know, you meet people, you go to clubs, you go to parties. The U.S. was playing there, so there were a lot of Americans there. And everywhere I went, people asked me, how long are you staying? How long are you in Brazil? And I'd say, 6 days. And they were like, no, total. Like, how long are you staying in Brazil? And I said, no, really, 6 days. And so, you know, finally, I was like, why do people keep asking me that? And I talked to a guy from San Diego. His name was Steven. And he said, well, I'm here for 3 months. And let me tell you how I'm doing it. He worked in heating and air conditioning repair. He would go home to San Diego, work, save up his money, and then leave and travel until the money was gone, and then go back and do it all over again. So that was it. I mean, that was it for me. I was a pharmacy technician in a hospital, and I was like, you know what? I can do the same thing. Hospital pharmacy technicians get hired, you know, immediately. There's no problem. It's not a job where you can travel, but it's a job where if you quit, you can get your job back with no problems. So that was it. That was it. That was July of 2014. And it took me just over a year to get myself up and out, to get rid of the obligations, and I paid off my car, pay off my debt, sell stuff. And so it took me about a year. And by September of 2015, I was out. Yeah.
Fantastic. I love it. And so you're in Delaware, in Wilmington, right?
Yeah.
Is that
Yes.
your home? Is that where you were born? Is that where you're from?
Yes, I'm from Delaware. I've lived in Ohio. I've lived in Texas. When I was in the Army, I was stationed in Texas, but I'm from Delaware. Yeah, Delaware is not the least expensive. It's not the cheapest place. So if you're looking for a place in the U.S. to stay, you know, if you're a traveler from outside of the U.S. looking to come to the U.S. and looking for an inexpensive place to stay, Delaware's got a decent location, but it's not the most cost friendly place.
Okay, so tell us about your grown-up gap year. I'm dying to know about this.
I decided when I quit my job, I decided that I was going to get, you know, make sure I had enough money to travel for a year and see. It wasn't like see the entire world, because some people in a 12-month trip, some people would hit like 50 countries, you know. But I wanted to be able to take my time and see enough of the countries that I really wanted to see first, you know, my top priorities. So I took my $15,000. It was about $14,000 and change. I had a $1,200 a month budget, and I went to Southeast Asia. I spent 2 months in Thailand, 2 months in the Philippines, 2 months in Vietnam. I spent a month in Indonesia, including Bali, a month in Cambodia, and I also went to Australia. because Australia, once you're in Southeast Asia, it's not as expensive to get to Australia as it is from here. I also ended up with a really cheap flight from there to Budapest. So I flew to Budapest for a few days, almost a week. I went to Budapest and Serbia. And then at the end of the trip on my way home, I went to France and Portugal. I'd already been to Spain, so I didn't visit Spain this time. But it was a wonderful experience. I did a lot of, not a lot, but I did some volunteering in exchange for room and board. I did some house sitting to keep my costs down. But my main goal was just to see, you know, get to a country and see it. see Vietnam, see Thailand, and not feel like I had to rush around and hop from place to place really quickly. I met a lot of people who were doing that, you know, who were one day in a city and 4 days in the whole country. But I took my time, and 2 months was a pretty good amount of time to spend in those countries in Southeast Asia. And it was a great experience.
Now, how did you choose your top places to go?
I just wanted to go someplace that looked totally different. I'd never been to Asia. And so I wanted to start with something that was foreign, you know, like, you know, something that just looked like not what I was used to seeing. And I needed good internet access, which sounds weird, but I did need good internet access because I knew that when I left, I wanted to be able to stay gone. And so I needed to try to find some sort of online work. And I needed the price to be low because I had that $14,000 was all I had for the 12 months. I needed it to last me 12 months. And Southeast Asia was just at the top. You know, Southeast Asia just ticked all those boxes. Plus, I don't enjoy wintertime at all. I wanted good weather. And Southeast Asia fits. Once you get to a region, it's easier to move around from place to place than if you go from region to region. So, if, you know, you're trying to fly from South America over to Africa, to Europe, to, you know. So it was better for me to just focus on that one region. And like I said, some things did pop up. Some flight deals did pop up. So I left from time to time. But I knew that Southeast Asia was going to be able to tick off all the boxes for what I wanted for that trip.
Okay. Sounds good. Yeah. Sounds good. Well, I guess this is the time we get to know about Vacarious. What is Vacarious?
It's right now it's a blog with a service. It's a blog to help people plan their own grown-up gap year. And if you want to talk to me, there's a service where you can talk to me and I can help you plan out your own grown-up gap year. While I was gone, and even before I left, people that I would talk to at work, at church, everywhere would be like, "Oh my gosh, I'm so jealous. I wish I could do that." Or, you know, "You're so brave." But really, there's no difference between there's no difference between me and the people who didn't do it, except that I did it, right? That I took the step. There's no like special gene, right? Or, you know, it's just that you take the step. You feel the fear. I was still afraid to do it. You feel the fear, but you still take the steps. And so I just wanted to put up a resource where people could, where adult women, black adult women could see that you can do this. Because I did know that people were doing this beforehand, but I just didn't think my people were doing it. I just didn't think it was for me until I saw, you know, until somebody told me, you know, the Stephen from San Diego told me about it. And then I Googled it and I'm seeing, oh, there are women. There are single women out there traveling alone. Oh, there are black people out there traveling alone. And so Vacarious is my blog and my resource to help people find out about the idea of the grown-up gap year and to do it, because you don't want to keep that regret. That's something that you can wait too late, I think. You know, there are some things that, you know, you can put off some things, but this kind of travel, if you wait until, you can wait too late. I took a vacation with my parents. We went to Los Angeles. I took a vacation with my parents when my mom had just retired. So I guess they were 65 and 67. And we had a good time, but, you know, her knee hurts, his hip hurts, that, you know, they can't do this, they don't want to go there. We went to the Getty Museum, and my mom was so excited to see a photography exhibit, but then she didn't want to walk up to it, you know. So you know, I just want to have a resource out there where people know that they can do it and have me out there so that if they want to talk to me, you can talk to me. You can schedule some time and we'll chat. And I'll, you know, if you want a little bit of help planning, if you want a lot of help planning, I can help you with that too.
And I think you're probably set up in Delaware as a business structure, right? You just went with the home team, yeah?
Yeah. Oh, what I the only thing I know about setting up a business in a different state is that different states have, you know, because of tax rules, Delaware does have income tax. So people ask that question a lot. Delaware does not have sales tax, but we do have income tax. So some people choose to set up a business in a state where there's no income tax.
Mm-hmm. I remember hearing before that Delaware was one of those magical cities. I'm not sure how true it is, but I remember hearing that it's one of those great cities to file a business.
Yeah, I don't, unfortunately, I don't know. So I don't know, but I do. Yeah, there are a lot, you know, your most credit card issuers, lots of banks are set up incorporated in Delaware, but I don't know the ins and outs. I don't know why, what makes Delaware the haven.
Okay, so I guess we will switch a bit of gears here. Given that you're still traveling, the purpose of Loco is about speaking to people who have discovered their soul's home.
Yes.
And given that you're still traveling, would you say that you've come across any place that felt that it may be your soul's home or that you want to go back and sort of re-examine, investigate a bit further to see if there's something to it? Or is that not something that you are necessarily in search of?
I'm definitely in search of that. Absolutely in search of that. I found places that while I was there, I felt like, oh, I could stay. Portugal was that place. Portugal has beautiful beaches. It's not very expensive compared to the rest of Western Europe. Good food. They have a cultural mix compared to a lot of Western Europe. So Portugal felt good, but once I left, you know, and so I didn't feel like it was a home, you know, but I would definitely go back. The places that really spoke to me were South Africa, which is my most recent trip. And Vietnam. Vietnam didn't necessarily feel like a home, but I felt very happy to be there. And I felt it was a good place to be. I wanted to stay. I wanted to be there. I wanted to stay. And I will go back there. But South Africa was the total package. South Africa was and is. You've been to South Africa?
Not yet. It's on my list for sure. It's in calling my name.
Yeah, get there. Yeah, it's a combination of natural beauty and, you know, it's really beautiful. When you see pictures of, people always show pictures of Cape Town, which is, of course, gorgeous. There are beaches and, you know, but the whole the country is just beautiful. There are mountains, there are highlands, there are, you know, just coasts and coasts and coasts of water. And it's just a beautiful place. And the people were very warm and welcoming to me. I was nervous about, South Africa was actually one of the places, if you said, give me five places you don't want to visit, South Africa was on that list. Because I thought that all I could think of was, it's not been that long since apartheid. I don't want to have to deal with racist white people. And I don't want to have to be confronted with segregation while I'm traveling, you know. But when I got there, it wasn't what I expected. I stayed in homes of white people and black people. I had made friends and, you know, with everybody, with the people who were there. And it was more, maybe because it caught me so off guard, it was a much better experience than I was even expecting. I thought I would go and just, you know, oh, well, I was here, you know, the flight was cheap, so let's go. But it ended up really calling to me, and I will go back. I'd like to take some family members back if they'd like to take a trip there. And I could see myself staying there. I could see myself staying there. It's more, it's South Africa's in between the familiar and the totally foreign. Like there's a mix of that. Some of it, in some parts of South Africa, you could just, you know, I could be in Delaware, you know. And then in other parts of South Africa, I'm like, this is not home. There are zebras. I'm driving to my hotel and there are zebras just crossed in front of me, you know. Like, some, you know. So South Africa was a good mix of good weather and good prices and very nice, friendly people. It was, yeah, so I will definitely go back and revisit. I'd like to take some family members there and then maybe stay. if they can't stay, right. I'll stay. Johannesburg was my favorite city. Cape Town is the city that most people say, oh, Cape Town is so great. But Cape Town is a nice, you know, there are beaches all over Cape Town, and it's very, cosmopolitan. Like, you in Cape Town, you could be anywhere pretty much in the world, but when you're in Johannesburg, you know you're in Africa. The markets are different. The, you know, it's just really fun and lively and beautiful, and like I said, the food is good, and it's, yeah, so South Africa was it definitely called to me as a home. I'm still going to keep looking, because I don't know for sure. You know, there's a lot out there. I don't know for sure, but South Africa definitely is up on that list of places where I could stay.
Okay, sounds good. This is a pretty good segue into the favorite section of this podcast. You laid it out pretty well, so we're going to get into your favorites, if you don't mind.
Sure.
What would you say in terms of, so your favorite places, I take it, are Vietnam and South Africa, yeah?
Yeah, those, I would list those as my two favorite countries.
Okay, so yeah. We're going to get into your favorite places to eat. Do you have any places that you remember or recall that you enjoyed having breakfast?
Breakfast. Now, breakfast for me is tricky because I'm a French toast girl, and French toast is not done very well in a lot of parts of the world. So,
what about a brunch spot? Did you take any breakfast or brunch spots while you were there?
Yes. So I would say, now we'll do both countries. Now, Vietnam has amazing coffee. Even though I skipped over breakfast, Vietnam has amazing coffee. Amazing coffee. It tastes like chocolate. Like, it tastes really chocolatey and really rich. And they make it with sweetened condensed milk. And it's like, it'll make you fat, but it's worth it. It's great. So in Vietnam, in Hanoi, in the north, Hanoi, there's a restaurant that's famous for their coffee, but they invented the egg drop coffee. It's really a difficult place to get in, not difficult to get into, but it's a difficult place to find because it is right inside of a silk shop. So you have to go into Hanoi, you have to walk into the silk shop, walk through the shop upstairs, and then you'll find their coffee. And that place, okay, it's called Giang in Hanoi. Yeah, egg coffee is a little different from their regular coffee because, of course, it's got an egg in it, which isn't something that I would normally do. But it was worth trying. And then their regular coffee on its own is just great. It's, like I said, the coffee in Vietnam is amazing. The breakfast is different. So in Vietnam, you just eat pho for breakfast, pho. It's a soup and it's great, and you can get it with either pork or beef or chicken or whatever. So that's what I ate for breakfast. And you can eat that anywhere. Like, you don't have, there's no point in going to a nice expensive restaurant. You just find any place that has table and chairs set up outside, and you just sit down and they'll bring it to you, and it's delicious, and you'll be happy for the morning. In South Africa, I had a hard time. Like I said, a French toast, it's hard to find. In some places you think, oh, I'm going to get good French toast here. But South Africa is full of a lot of British and Dutch people, and they just don't do French toast. They like their breakfast with baked beans and, you know, their British breakfast, baked beans and sausage. So I don't have a good answer. I'm sorry. For breakfast in South Africa, if you like the baked beans and sausage and stuff, you'll be able to find that everywhere because they do a British breakfast pretty much any place you go.
Did you find yourself people watching? Did you find yourself a nice place to go and just sit and have coffee and people watch?
All the time. In South Africa, in Johannesburg, they have Sunday markets. Ma Boeng Market in Johannesburg is a great place. You can spend all, in fact, I did spend all day Sunday there. You can get there, you can shop, you can eat, you can sit and watch, you can have some drinks, you can, whatever you want to do, you can just sit out there. It's in a little shopping district in the middle of town, and there are, you know, coffee shops and restaurants and bars and cafes any place you pick is going to be good because they're mostly places that have been there for a while. It's an established part of town. It's not a new town, even though it's pretty hip. It's not new. But then while you're there, you can shop and sit and watch, and people are going to be coming and going all day. And it was my favorite place to go in South Africa. I love Sundays in Johannesburg. In fact, I would leave, like when I went to the safari at Kruger, I made sure I came back in time to be there on Sunday so that I could shop and so that I could just sit out at the market and have a good time.
Do you have a casual dining spot on any of your travels?
Yes. Let's go back to Vietnam. Hoi An, Vietnam is a town kind of in central Vietnam, and it's on the water, so it's a nice beach town, but they have an old historic district as well. Hoi An has great restaurants. A lot of places you go, if you go look on TripAdvisor, it's going to recommend you go someplace like, you know, just some chain restaurant or something. But in Hoi An, any restaurant that has a good rating is a good restaurant. My favorite was Red Dragon. It's not in the town. It's a little bit outside of the town going towards the beaches. But if you can bike ride, like everybody in Hoi An rents a bike and rides around. So you can ride your bicycle to the restaurant. It's definitely not that far. Maybe a 15-minute bike ride out of town if you're staying in the middle of town. But Red Dragon was amazing. They're the kind of restaurant that has a pretty small menu. You know, not pages and pages of food, but everything on that menu was good. And I know because I ate it all. I stayed there. I stayed in a house across the street from the restaurant, basically, for a whole month. I rented the place for 1 month. And so that was my, you know, that was my go-to spot when I didn't feel like looking for another place to eat that day. And Red Dragon was amazing. Nobody told me about it. Everybody told me to go to Miss Lee Cafe, which was very good, and a couple of other places. But Red Dragon, I recommend it hands down. You're not going to have to worry about crowds. The price is right. Just like all of Vietnam, it's hard to find an expensive meal in Vietnam. But the food was amazing, amazing. I had some great salmon. Everything I had there was delicious. I took a friend there. She came, she said, after I left, she and her husband went back. Like, it was great. So I recommend Red Dragon in Hoi An, Vietnam. Don't miss it.
So what about your favorite bakeries or places to get nice desserts?
South Africa has a bakery / coffee shop called Fornos, Fornos. It is a chain there, but it tastes like it's homemade. It is homemade, you know, because they make it on site, but it was so good. I went there several times and never had anything bad. Every time I went there, I would get something to take home. Like I would sit and eat my meal or breakfast or whatever, and then I would still order something to take home for later. But it's Fornos in they were all over Johannesburg. I don't know how much of South Africa they cover, but they had at least four or five locations in Johannesburg itself. But that was good. And when I would walk by, if it wasn't time to eat or if I didn't need any food, I would just look, like just go in and browse, see what's in there today. It smelled good, but their bread and their baked goods were just amazing. The coffee was okay. South Africa's coffee was not that great, but the food was good.
Okay, great. And what about cocktail bars or wine bars?
Now, in Vietnam, the bars are mostly for the foreigners. Like there are bia, like bia shops or bia restaurants, I guess they are, where you just go and get the local beer, but they're not going to have a full bar. So, you know, if you're with the locals, you're going to get the local beer, like Bia Hanoi or Bia Saigon, which wherever you are, but you're not going to find a full bar there. So if you want to have a good cocktail in Vietnam, you're better off going to a hotel, the local hotels. A lot of them will do ladies' night because a lot of them cater to travelers, to tourists and to expats and immigrants. So if you go to any hotel, like I said, I went to the Radisson and they had ladies' night. Go to a hotel and you'll have a good drink. But the local places are mostly beer. You know, you just sit down, they have plastic chairs and you sit down and you have beer and it costs like 50 cents. But for cocktails, that's the time in Vietnam where you're going to end up spending some money, because you're probably going to have to end up going to a Western hotel to get a good cocktail hour. But there are several. There are, if you go to in any of the cities, in I went from Hanoi all the way down to Saigon in the south, from the north to the south, in any of the major cities, any time you go to a hotel or something, you're going to find a good happy hour. They do promote happy hour very nicely.
Okay, well, that leads me to my curveball question. Any good dive bars or drunk food places?
Yeah. Like in Vietnam, it's all drunk food. Like, because like I said, you just walk down the street and stop at the corner, and it, like any place with plastic chairs, you just sit down and they'll bring you, you know, they'll take your order. So in Vietnam, the sandwich that everybody eats, the sandwich that you want to get, is called the banh mi. It's on a nice French bread, and there'll be some pork and some vegetables and some pate if you want it. You can get that at any stand in any store, like any stand, like on the street, a cart, you know, and it's going to be very good. At one time I had a man haggle me with the price. I knew it was going to cost me around 10,000 dong, which is, you know, Vietnam dollars, which is 10,000 dong was, I think, a dollar or something. And he tried to charge me more than 10 times the price. But most of the time, there's no problems. But yeah, so anywhere that is selling banh mi, if it's late at night, it's going to really hit the spot. The banh mi is just so good. They're not bad. Like, they're never bad. You're not going to get one that you don't like. Hoi An, the town that's on the beach, Hoi An is the inventor of the banh mi. So there are lots of restaurants there that tout that they are the number one banh mi restaurant. But I never had a bad one. They were always good. I recommend it. And then in South Africa, they eat braai, which is barbecue. So again, another place where you're never going to have a bad meal. You can't have bad barbecue. It's just not possible. So if it's late at night, any braai shop, any place you walk by that's cooking braai, just pull in and eat.
Okay, so we're taking this as your vouch for good drunk food.
Yeah. Believe me, I know.
I'm kidding. Okay, so since you spent a good amount of time in these places, 2 months at a time, I'm sure you had some good places that you'd go and shop for your groceries, or maybe some good open air markets.
Yes. That's the thing I love the most about Johannesburg. South Africa has markets everywhere. Some do it during the week. Some do it, you know, different nights during the week. But most of the markets are on Sunday. Like I said, Maboneng Market in town was amazing. There's also a market at Rosebank Mall. There is a market every day at Rosebank Mall underground. So you have to go out of the mall and go down some steps, and you'll see it. There are signs. But there's also a Sunday, that's open every day. But there's also a special Sunday market at Rosebank Mall on the roof, on top of the mall, on top of the parking garage. It's a combination of market and garage sale, or what they would call a trunk sale. And you can get anything you want there. I cleaned up. I bought so much stuff at that market that I had to buy a suitcase. I bought beaded jewelry. I bought some cloth handbags. I bought canvases, like paintings, you know, just the canvas rolled up. But that market is outstanding. That was the Rosebank. I went to Maboneng a couple of times, and Rosebank just had better prices, but it might have also been that by that time I knew what things should cost and I was better at negotiating. But there are markets all over town. I stayed in, because I came and went from Johannesburg several times, Johannesburg was my hub, and then I would go to other towns for, you know, a few days or a couple weeks. But because I stayed in Johannesburg several times, I stayed in different parts of town, and so I hit up 4 or 5 different markets, but those two were my favorite. Rosebank Mall, the one above Rosebank Mall on Sunday, and Maboneng Market on Sunday as well. And there's nothing you can't get there. Like, there's everything. There's clothes. I even got cards for people who would make stuff for me for later, but I didn't do that. You can buy jewelry. Of course you can buy food. Lots of food. And, stuff to take home, souvenirs to take home, whatever you want. Those two markets are amazing. Like the best market, the best shopping I've done ever.
So you would say that these are good places to connect with local designers and producers, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. If you're looking to go into business, or even if you just want things made for yourself, you go there. It's easy. Everybody's there. It's convenient. Everybody's there in one place. You can talk to them right away. The designer is standing there right there selling the items to you. Yes.
And in terms of little hidden gems that you found, local spots, neighborhoods that you really enjoyed while you were in these places, your favorite cities?
Okay. In Vietnam, off of Hanoi, in the northeast, Cat Ba Island is a really good place to sit and stay. It's a good place. It's a good island to visit. There are beaches down further south in Vietnam, but there might be a little crowded depending on what time you're there, what time of the year you're there. But Cat Ba Island in the north was quiet and very, very pretty. A lot of people sail around that bay, but they don't stay. You know, there are cruises and tours that could go around the island so you can see it because it's really beautiful, limestone cliffs, and it's really beautiful. But you can stay. A lot of people don't know that you can stay. There are plenty of guest houses and hotels and restaurants right on the island. Stay, take a few days to spend a few days there to get away from the hustle and bustle of the cities in Vietnam. It was just a really beautiful place. Like you feel like you're just secluded. All the limestone cliffs are surrounding you. The water is nice and clear and calm. It's really, really a pretty place.
Moving on to culture, how were you engaging in the culture in terms of places to visit, museums, galleries, the theater?
At first, when I was in Vietnam earlier in my trip, like Vietnam was in the earlier part of my gap year, so I did a lot of tours with tour groups, you know, tour guides, guided tours. I went to Sapa, S-A-P-A, which is a mountain region in Vietnam, and they have like a different cultural group, and they have, you know, women wear different, you know, they're wearing a different type of clothing. But I did those with tours, and it's not easy when you're on a tour to actually connect with people or talk to people. You're just, you know, sometimes rushed through and you take some pictures and then you leave and you don't really feel like you have a good solid cultural experience. But still, Vietnam does have a lot to offer. There are shows. They do water puppet theater, which sounds really strange, but it's really beautiful. They have the puppets and they have a live band, like live musicians playing. And it's a super Vietnamese thing. It's really cute and really fun and really inexpensive. And yeah, so water puppet theater in a couple of the cities as well. But to get away from the tours, I mostly would just, because I stand out as a Black woman traveling alone, I would just stop and have conversations with people. And then they would tell me where to go. So like I stayed in Hoi An, Vietnam for 1 month. And my neighbor who owned the salon, she owned the spa a couple of doors down, she would tell me places to go and what was happening in town. So it's always good to have a nice local connect. It was very different from being, you know, just rushed through with the tour guides. Vietnam has a lot of museums dedicated specifically to war and the American War, which they, you know, the Vietnam War is what we would call it, and they call it the American War. And they have a lot of museums dedicated to that and their history and to women's contributions during the war. And those were nice down in the capital in Saigon, down in Ho Chi Minh City. In South Africa, I was, like I said, I was nervous about my apartheid experience. Like I was nervous about what South Africa would feel like and, you know, what the vibe would be. And so I did not go on a tour to Robben Island, which is where Nelson Mandela was imprisoned, because I just couldn't figure out a time to go when I wouldn't be in a group full of white tourists snapping pictures. And I just didn't want to do it. Like I couldn't make myself do it. So instead I went to, there was a home that he lived in when he was still in prison, but he lived in a home instead of in the cell. And it was outside of the wine region, outside of Cape Town. And so I did take a visit out there, and you can just drive there and stop in and visit. It's a lot different from being, you know, on the tour with a bunch of other tourists.
Okay. Sounds good. Did you take any good day trips while you were visiting?
In Hoi An, Hoi An, Vietnam is the city that's on the water, the beach city. Hoi An is very close to Da Nang, which is a major city in Vietnam. I think it's the third largest city. So you can take a shuttle into Da Nang, or you can just rent a scooter, rent a motorbike if you know how to ride it, and drive into Da Nang. Da Nang has a marble mountain that was really fun. It's a big temple and a big, a big temple up on a mountain, but the mountain is actually marble. You know, you have to walk up a million steps, but it's really pretty and you get a really good view of everything. And it's probably not even 30 minutes ride away from Hoi An, from the city, from the beach town. Yeah. And Da Nang is a really nice city. Plus, if you're there and you need to do some shopping at some, you know, Western stores, you have a better chance of getting something there than you would in Hoi An, which is more of a small town. Also, not far from Hoi An, there's My Son, MYSON, which is old ruins, old temple ruins that are just really pretty. I think they're as old as the ruins in Cambodia. They're as old as the Angkor Wat temple, but they're more destroyed than Angkor Wat because of war and fighting in Vietnam. So it's just a really pretty place to walk through and see what Vietnam would have looked like, you know, 700 or 800 years ago when those temples were built. My Son is a really nice trip away from Hoi An, Vietnam. And then in Johannesburg, they're like the true capital, I guess, of South Africa is not too far away from Johannesburg in Pretoria. Pretoria's got some museums. I went to an art museum and a history museum in Pretoria. And then they have a really nice statue dedicated to Nelson Mandela in front of their congressional building. So Pretoria is a decent trip, and you can take the train there. There's no need to rent a car or anything. They have plenty of transportation once you get there. But Pretoria is a nice day trip from Johannesburg.
You know, we're all visitors of some place we go if we're not from there originally. So what would you say is a faux pas that a visitor should avoid?
Oh, that's good. This is going to sound weird, but in Vietnam, they expect you to negotiate on prices of things. It's really hard for me because it doesn't come natural to me. I'm not a good negotiator. I can't haggle for anything. But in Vietnam, they really expect you to go back and forth with them on the price, whether you're in the market, if you're at a stand, if you're, you know, except in the major stores, you know. But yeah, so don't be afraid to negotiate. But the real faux pas is don't lose touch on how much money you're actually negotiating on. So it sounds 5,000 dong sounds like a lot, but it's like 25 cents. So don't be the person who spends 10 minutes haggling over a quarter. Like, you're just wasting time. So keep that conversion in your mind while you're discussing the money. But Vietnam is a place where they like to discuss money. Like, it's just a place where people are going to talk about how much things cost, and they're going to ask you how much you want to pay for it, and how much did you pay for this at another item, even if you're at another stall. Like, even if you have an item in your hand that you clearly already purchased, they'll ask you how much you paid for it. You know, and then like try to negotiate you down. You're like, I've already bought this one. I don't need another one. So don't be afraid to talk about money in Vietnam, but also don't lose track of how much money we're actually talking about. Because even though we're talking about thousands of dong, it's probably just changed to you.
So Stephanie, tell us where listeners can find and connect with you more about Vicarious.
You can find me on Instagram, which is my favorite platform, at Vacarious, VacarIous. Same on Twitter and Facebook. My blog is vacarious.com.
Okay.
Okay, thanks for tuning in today. I hope you found this local's perspective informative and even inspiring. If so, please consider subscribing to Loco using iTunes or your favorite Android podcast player. If you have any comments or questions, or even a story you'd like to submit, please connect with us at loco.co, that's LOCAUX.CO. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next time.